Okay, good morning everybody. As Mr. Smiley said, my name is Hillary Heath, and today I'm going to talk to you about a novel approach to vertical gardening using an inexpensive growing structure. So here we go. I'd like to start talking to you about world hunger, and the two major contributors to world hunger are global shortage of land and the continuous increase in population. So according to the Food and Agricultural Organization of the United Nations, 925 million people suffer from chronic hunger worldwide. The graph you see was created by the World Food Program, and the statistics were taken from the FAO. And out of the 925 million people that suffer from chronic hunger, only 16 million of those people live in developed countries, which means 909 million of those are in underdeveloped countries. So the director of the FAO, General Jacques Diouf, says that because of undernourishment-related problems, hunger remains the world's largest tragedy and scandal. This graph was created by the FAO, and it's a graph of the undernourishment in the developing world. Well, what does undernourishment mean? It means food intake does not meet the minimum energy requirements to function properly, daily tasks, work, etc. And if you look at the graph, it shows from 1992 through 2015, 870 million people, or 1 in 8 people in the world, are undernourished in underdeveloped countries. And if you look between 2009 and 2012, there's no change between the 852 million people that are undernourished. So if this trend continues, by 2015, we'll have chronic hunger. So that brings me to my topic about vertical gardening and how it can help reduce the impact of world hunger and provide a potential solution. So, well, what is vertical gardening? It's growing vegetation vertically on the surface of structures or buildings, and this term is interchangeable with the term a living wall, which could be adjacent to a structure when you have vegetation on it as well. So some of the benefits include efficient utilization of space for vertical gardening and techniques. And of course, this does depend upon the design. There are various types of designs and methods for vertical gardening. They do have positive impacts on urban settings. It also links consumers to food production and, of course, environmental benefits. And they can be economically efficient depending upon the design that you use. Of course, with anything, we do have limiting factors, and the first three bullet points are the most limiting due to weight of the structure, depends upon the design, depending upon your design as well. Investment costs may be high. Water and soil holding capacities are a major factor as well. We all know how heavy that can be. And because there are so many methods and techniques, it is a challenge to adequately assess these living walls. Previous literature says that plants with shallow root systems work best, and of course, depending upon your plant material, you are limited, and the size of your structure, it's difficult in harvesting and pruning. So this brings me to the purpose of my research and my talk today, which is to examine the design and construction of an inexpensive A-frame vertical growing structure with the goal of creating a more economical and sustainable method for growing plants in a limited amount of space. And I'm sorry this is going so fast, it has a timer on there, and I don't know why it's working, but this is a vertical structure component, and we built these at Auburn University, and so this is just a breakdown of what this structure is composed of. We have the cattle fencing that serves as your living wall where the plants sit, and 2x4x8 foot wood-treated boards for the A-frame vertical structure, that's your stability, and then 1 foot by 4 foot by 8 foot wood boards as your slats that you can see behind the cattle fencing help stabilize the pots. And of course, we have our carriage bolts, nuts, and washers that keep the frame together, and the fencing stable is what keeps the cattle fencing onto the frame as well. So this is a cost estimate of the vertical structure components, and we got these costs from local hardware stores in Auburn, Alabama, as well as Lowe's. Now, I know that this cost is going to vary for different areas around the country and around the world, and of course you're thinking, well, how does this link to world hunger? You know, not everybody has these tools to build this. They don't have the products. But that doesn't mean there aren't hunger aid groups out there that can't make a kit and donate these to undernourished and underdeveloped countries. And as you can see, the total cost of our one structure, which I think is pretty good, tallies to $59.66. And this structure will last you a good 10 to 15 years. So you're getting a lot of bang for your buck. This is a picture of what my experiment looks like. And the bench plot on the greenhouse bench is a 4-foot by 4-foot space, and the vertical structure occupies the same amount of square footage. So this is similar to the slide you previously saw, except I went ahead and added in the cost of the soil and the pots, and this cost is for my entire experiment. That's why that soil cost is so high, and for the pots as well. So we did not include irrigation, which I'm sure you saw on the vertical structure, because you can hand water this structure, and not everybody has the capability to install irrigation, etc., or, you know, the ample water that the university requires that I don't have to pay for. So that's why we just included the pots. And I'm sorry that's going so fast. So that brings me to the objectives of my study, which, as I said, to examine the design and construction of a cost-efficient A-frame vertical structure within a limited amount of space. And the treatments we looked at, treatment one is our control, growing plants on the greenhouse bench. Treatment two is on one panel of the vertical structure facing north. Treatment three is on the other panel of the vertical structure facing south. The location of my research experiment was Patterson Greenhouse Complex on the Auburn University campus in Auburn, Alabama. Other materials that I used, I mentioned the pots, and we did have irrigation that you saw earlier provided by Rainbird, and we used 2 gallon per hour emitters in the pots for our irrigation, and landscape products provided our spaghetti tubing. So in my experiment, I actually have 3 species, but I'm only going to talk to you about the cardinal basil today due to time constraints. But the other 2 species I worked with were redleaf amaranth and dark red Detroit beet. I used a Pfaffer 3B mix for my soil media, and for the fertilizer, we used Casco Triple 14 with Myers, which is a controlled release fertilizer. So the methods I used was a randomized complete block design, and we had 4 blocks, 7 subsamples per species per block, 3 species, and 3 treatments. Oh, sorry. Go back. And the treatments are, as I mentioned earlier, treatment 1 is our control on the bench plot, traditional growing methods. Treatment 2 is the A-frame vertical structure, one panel facing north, and treatment 3 is the other side of the vertical structure panel facing south. So I sowed my seed April 8th, and I transplanted 252 seedlings April 28th, and we set up irrigation timings at 4 times a day for 3 minutes at each watering at 8 a.m., 11 a.m., 2 p.m., and 5 p.m., and we officially began the experiment on May 2nd. So we terminated the experiment starting by harvesting the basil on June 10th, and the post-harvest data we collected was total fresh weight, total leaf count, leaf area index, and total dry weight. The data analysis that we used was SAS version 9.3, and we ran ANOVAs using PROC-GLIMIX procedure. We analyzed with complete block designs the leaf count, leaf area index, and the dry weight, and the plant height and growth index was analyzed with a randomized complete block design, treatments and weeks, and a factorial treatment design. We also did Tukey's test, single degree of freedom orthogonal contrast tested linear and quadratic trends over weeks. All reported means are least squared means, and significance was at 0.05. So let's get into some results. This is just for the basil. So the average height per treatment per week, as you can see, we had significance in week 4 among height, and actually treatment 2 facing north on the vertical structure was the tallest, and then at 18.49 inches average per plant. And then treatment 1, our control, was the 2nd best, and then the shortest was treatment 3, vertical panel facing south. So we had a significant differences in the first 2 weeks, and I bet y'all are like, why? And then it kind of evens off. Week 4 was, you know, I'm a graduate student, so I'm still learning the ropes, and I didn't block each plant perfectly based on size, so we had some variations. They weren't all similar in size, and we thought that they just kind of caught up with each other as the experiment progressed, because if you look at weeks 3 and 4, all the average growth indexes are pretty much like the same, which is why you don't see any differences. So that was an error on my part. Let's look at the average leaf count for the basil per treatment per plant. There were significant differences among all treatments, as you can see, which is why they're in orange. And the treatment 1 had the highest leaf count at 211 average leaves per basil, which is our control treatment, and treatment 3 had the lowest, with the vertical panel facing south. The average leaf area index per treatment per plant, again, our control did better on the greenhouse bench, and treatment 3 did the poorest. Treatment 2 is in blue because there was no significant difference. They were pretty similar between treatment 1 and 3. So if we, based on like the graph you just saw, I bet you're thinking, well, the vertical structure's not looking so hot. Well, if you look at per square foot of production area, if you just think about, you know, the vertical structure occupies the same amount of square footage as the greenhouse bench. So one panel only occupies 8 square feet, while the greenhouse bench, the whole thing, occupies 16. So you actually get more leaf area per square foot of production from both treatment 2 and 3 when you compare it to 1. So you're getting more. So this is good. So it shows the experiment works if you look at it from this angle. Now, we did not analyze the stats for table 2, but these numbers are based on analyzed data in table 1, and we're still working on this data, so we're actually going to run this in SAS when we get back. So if we look at dry weight for the basil per treatment per plant, again, our control did the best at 19.68 grams per plant, and treatment 3, again, was the poorest at 14.01 grams per plant. But if we again go back to looking at the amount of space that each treatment occupies, treatment 2 does better based on square footage and dry weight, which is important for basil, than treatment 1 does, and treatment 3 also does better if you look at square footage. So in conclusion, the data shows that we placing the vertical structures of the panels facing north and south direction does impact overall growth for cardinal basil when you compare it to the overall growth of the greenhouse bench. And we also found that the direction of the vertical structures involving sunlight, I'm so sorry y'all, does affect growth index, leaf area index, height, etc. And based on the mathematical calculations that you saw in the tables, this data shows that one vertical structure actually increases the amount of dry weight and leaf area by 3-fold when you compare it to the greenhouse bench, which is great. So our wood A-frame vertical structure, it is an expensive and inefficient method for growing cardinal basil. And more work needs to be done. These are my references. I'm not even touching it. It's just kind of... and that's all I have for y'all.
Okay, we have time for a couple of questions.
Yes, ma'am.
Would it be possible,
you're talking about put the trough on the structure?
Yeah. So instead of having your pots on the structure, have a long vertical trough, plastic trough, fill that with soil, and then plant. So you can do it more high density.
Oh, I see what you're saying now. That's actually a really good idea. See, this is why it's like technique. It's so versatile. When we start talking about this, we're just like, oh, we could do this or this. That's a great idea and something to consider. And as I said, this is a new thing, so more work needs to be done, and that would be great. Definitely, definitely, because I mean, you don't think about it, but the plants on the greenhouse bench, you know, they're getting 360 sunlight, and on the vertical structure, they're just getting, it's just angled. So, and I'm sorry I didn't repeat that question. Yes, sir.
How did you happen to decide to use the north-south orientation?
Okay, so he asked, how did we happen to come about with the north and side treatments? This was a project that I took on from a different grad student, and we changed it a little bit. And so she had this set up in the manner you saw in the pictures, and we just kind of left it. So we just took a compass, and we were like, okay, north, south, that's our treatment. So we just kind of went with what we had.
Okay, one more.
Any difference as to what are you?
We didn't really, differences in water use is what he asked. We didn't really look at water usage. We do have data for EC and pH, but that's about it for looking at the basal. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.